Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in. Hello, I'm your host, Robbie C. And today I actually am flying solo in the booth. And I'll go ahead and I'll bring you inside. You know, we're all about, I've said it before, I'll say it a million times. I love bringing you guys behind the scenes of what we do here with podcasts. According to my wife, I had an overshare, but I can't even disagree with her, if I'm being honest. I absolutely am an overshare. But today, ABB is not in the house. And the reason ABB is not in the house is because he texted me and said, hey, I'm going to be out for PTO on Thursday when we normally record. Just wanted to see what your opinion are. Like, what are we planning for the podcast this week? And I had a couple people that I had been trying to line up for guest spot opportunities. But one of the big things that I like to push is, you know, when you're on vacation, be on vacation. And Brad is such a giver, and really so dedicated to y'all as an audience that Brad, like almost every time Brad's gone on vacation, there's a reason that Brad, I don't think, has really ever missed an episode, is because even when that man's on vacation, he is all business Brad. And so he wants to get out here and be with you guys and record the podcast. But I tried to be like, hey, take the time, take the PTO. I'll take care of the podcast this week. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of the podcast this week. Unbeknownst to me, I didn't realize at the time, it's in my calendar now, but it's Brad's birthday today. So, I want you guys to head to the comments, wish ABB a happy birthday, his birthday. So we wanted to make sure that we took care of it. So getting that out on the top side, please, please, please head to the comments, head to his Instagram, comment on everything. Happy birthday. You guys are going to be seeing this a day after his birthday. His birthday is, this Thursday, like I said. So make sure you go show him some love. I'm super grateful for Brad, everything he does for Foundation, for Atlas, and for this podcast. Wouldn't be possible without him. So thank you so much, Brad, for everything you do. I hope it has been an incredible birthday with the family, and we look forward to having you back on the podcast next week. But I wanted to, we didn't want to just have me ramble for a little while. So I reached out to a friend who is on the Disc Golf Pro Tour, and I said, hey, it's been a bit. We chatted. I've met him in person several times. Got to know him that way. And he is just a stand-up human being. Really, really grateful for him. And just, I think he brings a lot to the table, but he's not a Pro Tour name that you may be familiar with for the Pro Tour, but you might know his name if you watch certain content creators. And so, but I joked with him when I saw him at the Northeast Disc Golf Expo this past year, or 2024. Yeah. When I saw him there, because he was walking around with another Pro Tour player. And I said, everyone's fawning over this guy, but they don't realize that we have a major champion standing right here with us. So today's guest, a major champion on the disc golf, or not, sorry. He is a major champion. It's not a stretch. He is a major champion on the Disc Golf Pro Tour, but he's not, because he won a major on the Pro Tour, if that makes sense. You know what? I'm just going to stop rambling. I want to introduce you to today's guest, Paul Kranz. And before I get more tongue-tied, we're going to bring him in. Paul's an incredible human being, and I can't wait for you guys to get to know Paul. Let's dive in. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the podcast, Mr. Paul Kranz. Paul, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing fantastic.
Dude, Paul, yeah. It is a pleasure to have you on here, man. I'm flying solo today, so excited to have you come hang out and chat. I got to meet Paul at the Northeast Disc Golf Expo 2 years ago. We got to meet, and they got to tag up again last year, or I guess this year, is the better way to put it. But Paul, I introduced you as a major champion. So I'm excited for this. I like to, even when we talked in person at Northeast Disc Golf this year, you were walking with Simon. People were, you know, all chat with him. And I was like, wow, all these lamos don't even realize that there's a major champion standing right next to him, and they're just moving past it. So tell us your major title and tell us a little bit about your history of disc golf. How long have you been playing, things like that?
So I won Amateur Worlds back in 2022, and that was my first legit tournament year, I would say. I started playing July 2019, so it's been a little over 4 years now, getting close to 5 years. So definitely have not had the most experience in disc golf, but I've made the most of it with a lot of practice. Yeah, I don't know. I just found disc golf through a group of Ultimate Frisbee players. A good friend invited me, and then like a month later, the guy who ran it brought some discs. And I asked if I could borrow a few, and he said sure. I'm pretty sure my first putter was a JK Pro AVR.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And in the Northeast, so like you're in the Mass area. So I always like down here in the South, JK AVRs for 10 months out of the year, they feel almost like rubbery because they're so floppy. Is that sort of like, are they a little stiffer up there considering it's so much colder for y'all, or are they still pretty floppy?
Most of the year they would be, kind of stiff, but when I got them, it was like 90 degrees.
So super floppy. I love it. Yeah. Sick. Well, we have you start playing 4 or 5 years ago. So we want our players to get to know you because, for those who don't know Paul's name, I would say most famously where you should know him is from his AM World title, because it truly, that was the year it came down. Y'all went into a playoff for the win, right?
No, that was like US Amateurs.
US Amateurs. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But same year, two weeks later.
Wild. Wild.
Yeah.
First full tournament you're playing, and you end up in a finals for like a push for two huge titles. That is insane, dude. Insane.
Yeah.
So where you should know him is for these things. But some of you will know him from Simon's vlogs and things like that. But we'll talk about that later on during the podcast. You know, got to give some people other reasons to stick around, things like that. But we want them to get to know you as a player because you currently are on the pro tour. Do you have a full card, right?
Yeah, I got the full card through an exemption.
Okay. So that is incredible. First off, so we have a pro tour player with us, ladies and gentlemen, and we ask these questions, Paul, for people to get to know our guests normally because we're going to be like breaking down their bag, and so it kind of gives context for, oh, you have a you have an insanity in your bag. Okay, well, if we know your game, we're going to learn how that insanity should fly for you or things like that, as opposed to when you describe how it flies. So for them to get to know your game a little bit on a pro tour level player, a major champion level, I'm going to keep pushing this because I believe that is a huge accomplishment, and I think everyone should. So I want to give credit where it's due, sir.
Appreciate it.
But we put you in a field and we said, all right, Paul, we're going to put a basket X amount of feet away from you. How far do you feel like you can consistently reach that basket? Not saying like with the tailwind downhill, this is my max distance, but like golf lines, you're saying I can reach this basket on a backhand and a forehand.
Are we talking like circle one accuracy or just distance wise?
I would say you can give us both. You can give us both because I think that's an important distinction, especially for tour players.
All right. I would say circle one would be 425 feet and that would be hyzer.
Okay.
And then like a bit more technical distance shot would be not counting circle one, would probably be like 470.
Okay.
So I don't throw farther than 500 feet, but I can throw accurately below 500 feet. Like I can throw hyzers 450 every now and again, depends on the day. Depends on the body shape. But like you would think if I can throw a hyzer 450 that I can throw a distance shot 600. No, not even close. I don't know. I've trained my disc golf game to be more accurate shots. So I've never really clicked with that like farther distance.
Yeah. So that was my follow-up was, so a lot of people, do you feel like that there are folks obviously that you see them enter the distance competitions and things like that. And it's like Do you feel like it's two very different skills, the like just trying to go raw distance versus accurate distance?
Yeah, 100%. Because I, on the pro tour, I outdrive a ton of players, more than you would think, especially for my body stature and how long I've been playing. I outdrive a lot of players, but when it put us in a field and they'll outthrow me by 150 feet easily.
Fascinating. Yeah. So if you were working with someone, would you advise them to take your route?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I've been playing for 5 years and I made it on pro tour pretty quick. Just with my style of game. Although if you're trying to make it on the pro tour, I would say you'd want more distance in your game. That's one thing that I've learned. But at the same time, you just need to like go the Joey Buckets route and make what you have work. And clearly what he has works. I haven't quite figured out that mental side of it. I get to these pro tour courses and I think they're harder than they are. So then I tweak my game a bit. But this past weekend, I learned that I don't need to. I can throw farther if I want to. There's one shot this past weekend where I was trying to throw 470 feet. But I threw 525 feet to a better spot than I was expecting. So I would say depends on how dial I am.
Okay. Yeah. So keeping that idea going of if you wanted to get on tour, you had to do that. I know. I feel like some people have different answers, but this is your first full year on tour. And so if someone was, because we have like Bonanza is documenting his journey, trying to get on the tour, trying to get a card. And I feel like he's asked a couple people and that answer kind of shifts. So for the viewer at home, when you're watching these pro tour courses, it's just so difficult to grasp how far people are actually throwing, right? Because for y'all, a 400-foot hyzer can look rather stock.
Yeah.
But for us, obviously, just a 400-foot shot in general does not look stock at all. So you guys make it look too easy at times. So the difficulty doesn't transfer. So if you were to tell someone, like, if you're looking to go make it, if you want to get a tour card and cash on tour, how far would you say on both sides, like forehand and backhand, you probably need to have in the repertoire to even consider like pushing those courses?
I would say a 350-foot forehand, but that would be more stock angle, like straight hyzer. Okay. But you really don't need more than 350. And then backhand, probably 450 stock angles.
Okay.
I would say you rarely need to throw more than 450 on any hole. Because most of the par threes that are over 450, they're downhill. And if they're not, then that's just ridiculous. But
yeah,
I would say not as far as you would think. Almost anyone who has the dedication could get the courses and throw their shots.
Okay. That is positive to know. I like that. Now, one area that I do think that people hold themselves to a pro tour standard when they shouldn't is especially is the putting green. Like I'll get to round two, we'll be sitting at lunch between a two-day event, little seat here in town. And I'll have an MA3 player tell me like, oh man, yeah, no, I missed one circle one putt today. Like, what am I doing? And I'm like, you're an MA3, my man. That's okay. Like, that's perfectly acceptable. Right. It's a little different than being on the pro tour. So for you, one of the questions we ask on the putting green is, all right, Paul, we put you on the putting green. You got 10 putts from 15 feet, 10 putts from 25 feet, and 10 putts from 40 feet. How many are you expecting to make at each station?
10 out of 10 from 15. if you miss any of those, you just stepped up
tough.
stepped up and just grip locked it or something. 15 feet is way closer than people think.
Yeah.
And then 25 feet, I would say 8.
Okay.
But yeah, it all depends on the wind. When I think ProTorall, I think it's just wind. So on the Pro Tour, I would probably make like 6. But any other day, it would probably be 9, 8 or 9. And then 40 feet, I'd hope to make around 5.
Okay. Are you a step putter? Are you a spin putter? What's your stroke?
My putt is unique in my opinion. I release at the low point of my swing. So when my arm is going down, I release there instead of at the, and my arm will end like a curve like that.
Okay.
So I go straight down, straight up, and on the upward momentum, I release it. So it's mainly because of my height and my arm length and leg length. I need to utilize all the momentum that my body can put into it. So my putt is technically a spin putt, and I'm just pushing at the same time. So
okay.
It's not like I'm lobbing it into the air because of that. It's still head level direct at it most of the time.
So you've mentioned your height a couple times. So for context, so people can know, how tall are you?
5'5", and I weigh 115 pounds.
Okay. So to me, I love that because I think so often when people are like, they look at the Calvins of the world, they look at the ABs and they're like, well, no wonder they throw so far. They are gargantuan human beings. Like, I'm never going to be able to throw 400 feet because I am under 6 feet tall. Right. And here you are throwing 525 foot shots in tournaments at 5'5". So it gives hope for all of our short.
I do like to say if I was 6'3", I'd probably throw 700 feet.
It helps. I will be the first to agree that the lanky limbs do help to a certain degree. If you know how to use them, they can help to a certain degree.
Yeah,
it certainly makes tap-ins easier because my tap-in range is definitely a little longer.
Makes sense.
That's beside the point. So our last question for the getting to know your game side, Paul, is that what would you say is the biggest strength of your game?
That's difficult because usually it's putting. And this past weekend it was putting, but I've been struggling more than you can imagine on the putting green. But I would probably say putting, even when I'm struggling, which in my opinion, it's not good. I would rather have my tee shots be the strength. I would personally rather have a birdie look on every hole and miss 60% of them.
Talk us through that a little bit. Yeah, talk us through that mentality.
Well, with my putting style, I'm almost never going to three putt unless I roll away. So realistically, if I have a birdie look in every hole, I shot a bogey free round, and I birdied, say, 6 holes, 7 holes. And then on a good day, I would birdie 12 holes, 13 holes.
Okay.
No bogeys. If I was throwing well. But because I don't throw well sometimes, I give myself bogey opportunities, double bogey opportunities. I go out of bounds. And then I put all the pressure on the putt to make par saves and then long birdie looks. So in reality, tee shots are, I'll say, way more important than putting. If you don't know how to throw the disc, you're never going to birdie.
That's fair. So that it's interesting because I feel like we can push that narrative, and I'm part of the ones pushing the narrative. Like you hear this phrase, right? Like drive for show, putt for dough type deal. Mm-hmm. But especially like I remember the one Pro Tour event that I ended up playing, because I played MCO when it was a Silver Series. And so, like, I was there, and I don't throw far. Like, I know I don't throw far. And looking at my putting percentage by the end of the weekend, I was in the top half of the field easily. I was really in the top, like, 25% of the field in putting, and I came in second to last. For exactly what you're saying, of like, yeah. My putts were for pars and bogeys, and everyone else's putts were for birdies and pars. Like,
right.
And I don't care how good you are at putting or not. If you're putting for a birdie versus putting for a bogey, the pressure feels very different.
Oh yeah, completely. I would say just having any opportunity for birdie is all that matters. Because I would rather play a birdie-free round, but throw good shots and play a bogey-free round, and you just get 18 pars, than to, like, suck it up in the front nine and then, you know, get some shots together and get a few birdies and then shoot even par. So yeah. The other thing is, if you're not throwing well, your putt is going to be less confident. And I guess it can go the same way the other way, is if you're not putting well, your drive is going to be less confident because you feel like you need to put it close. But I'd say the whole thing is start your round with good drives and then make a 25-foot putt, and then you're off to the races.
Yeah. Now, I think an interesting part of this is you mentioned for your putt, a 3-putt's pretty much never going to happen. So I do feel like that's an important distinction for folks, because especially if you end up playing like local leagues or you play with a lot of AMs, the amount of times I'll see a 3-putt happen is shocking, because it is, okay, I have this 25-foot look for a birdie. I ran it way too hard. Okay, now I'm 20 feet past on the other side and I'm a little rattled because now this is my par putt. I have to make this. Oh no, you missed the 20-footer. And now that next 25-foot putt you're looking at for a birdie, you're like, what am I supposed to do? Like, how am I supposed to handle this? So do you feel like work on the drives, focus on the drives, but also it's not ignoring the putting. We're not trying to say, like, I don't feel like you're trying to say putting isn't important. It's just it's very difficult for unless you're playing a pitch and putt, I would guess. It's very difficult for your putting to really carry around consistently.
Correct. I do have one scenario where my putt carried around, and I putted 509 feet of distance. through 7 holes, I had 365 feet of putts, and I was 6 down through 7 with one circle one birdie. So if you can putt like that, who cares about throwing?
Sure.
But doing that consistently is way harder than throwing consistently. So if you can get your tee shots dialed in and just practice putt consistently, I think you'll cash at every Pro Tour event. Yeah. Me, on the other hand, I've been throwing trash. I've also been putting trash, so it's been a little difficult, but I figured my putt out this past week. So.
Okay. Well, dude, we're looking at, we want to look at your bag for a second, and then I want to talk a little bit more about Pro Tour experience, what it's like out on the road, because you honestly, you had a probably not the start you wanted at all for the Pro Tour this year, but also some life circumstances came your way that didn't help that process either. So I want to talk about that a little bit. But before we dive in that, I want to talk about your bag. So currently sponsored by MVP, but when you won your major title in 2022, I remember so clearly you're on Simon's vlog and you're asking, or he asked you, like, if you were to get sponsored by someone, who would it be? You mentioned Dismania. And then it was another Simon vlog where they offered, like, where you had either received it on Simon's vlog or they talk us. So you get your first major experience. And I don't want to like get you in trouble with MVP. So I don't want to talk too much about that side of things, just giving context for people to transition you into. You sign with MVP. You're going the gyro discs. Talk us through building, going from open bag to Discmania sponsored to MVP sponsored in really a 2 year period.
I would say, yeah, 3 year period. No.
Okay.
No, 2.5, I would say. So, yeah, I played U.S. Amateurs in 2022 and Amateur Worlds. I was open bag, and I threw almost all this mania. A lot of FDs. I played with the P1X. Just whatever Discmania disc I could think of. But I also bagged like a Wraith and Metal Flick Destroyers. Those are great for my distance and arm speed and shot control that I like. So yeah, just some Destroyers, Wraiths, a Metal Flick Gator. But basically all Discmania type molds. And then I don't remember when Simon offered it to me, but we were at Maple Hill. We played a doubles gold round. And after the round, we went up to the Sap House to do the outro. And I'm just used to him trying to find cool spots to do an outro. So I was like, yeah, like, let's go up top. And then he just pulled out a contract out of his bag and offered me a Discmania contract. And I waited about a month before accepting it because I wanted to make sure it was right for me. But yeah, and then when I got on Discmania, the switch was super simple for me. And then over this past off season, MVP reached out and we started talking. And I did a lot of thinking, making sure it was the right thing. Went to Simon's house to check out what he had, and just I needed to make sure it was the right thing for me. And then I accepted the offer, and that's when Simon gave me probably 50 discs to try, and then I got maybe like 100 from MVP when I did research and went on their website and found some discs that I wanted. But the switch has been a lot easier than you would think, but that's probably because I've only been playing for 4 legit years.
Okay.
So I don't have perfect muscle memory with all these discs and whatever. So switching was simple. And actually, when I first switched, I'd say 90% of my bag were brand new discs. And I went to play a local course, like never thrown before. They're just out of the box, brand new. I went to go play a local course and I beat my course record.
Wow.
So.
Okay. So gyro's just better. That's what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. Just that good.
I would say gyro is the most predictable out of the box.
Okay.
Like I can feel a putter or a mid-range, and I'm like, all right, this is gonna do exactly what I imagine it to do.
Okay. I've always wondered because, like, when we think about the inconsistency that comes from a lot of the manufacturers, like, I think of Innova is at the top of the list, right? Just because their molds are so old that it's like, if you pick up a Destroyer, it's so hard. You and I could walk into a pro shop and both pick up a Destroyer that seems to be from the same run, and they could fly different just based on, did they cool longer? Like, where was the party line? Whatever that may be. And I've always wondered with MVP if that fact that they have to double mold it, if that almost helps the consistency because of the fact that, like, they have to get these discs moving through so many different processes that it helps make that easier. But amongst the molds, you talk about consistency. What are some of the molds that we'll start on the negative and we'll move to the positive? How's that sound? What are some molds that you thought, oh, I'm going to love this, like, for sure, that didn't necessarily gel with you?
Instantly the Tesla. That was my most looked forward to disc. and I absolutely suck with it. I don't know if it's I think it's the rim shape. The Wrath and the Tesla are almost the same disc, but the Wrath has a flatter top and not as deep of a rim, versus the Tesla has a deeper rim, bit more severe wing, and then the top almost kind of like it like rounds to the flat.
Okay.
And for some reason, I grip lock that disc, and then when I'm scared of grip locking it, I'll already release that disc, and then I can't forehand it.
Okay.
I have a putter with me. When I forehand, all that matters is this knuckle is sitting on it. Whereas some discs, it'll be like that.
Okay.
And that's how I can determine if it's a good forehand disc or not. And the Tesla sips like it's a good forehand disc.
Okay.
So, the Tesla is the big one for me, because I thought I was going to love it. But with that being said, the Wrath has been fantastic. So, and then the other one would probably be the time-lapse, because I have small hands, like probably the smallest you'll see on tour or really anywhere. just think of like an 8-year-old hand, 8-year-old boy, like, That's kind of how small my hand is. Oh. And that you would think that I would want to bag a 12-speed. Just that, I don't know, that's kind of the smallest and fastest grip disc you can throw.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I can't really grip it too well. The Hex, I bagged the Hex for the beginning of the year, but found that I don't like it compared. I like it, but not as much compared to the Matrix.
Okay. Okay. Oh. That's the Hex was one of the discs that I was going to ask about, because I feel like if you go across most manufacturers, there is a mold that I feel like always gets sold incorrectly to the people. So the Hex, I feel like people describe the Hex as if it's going to be this like perfectly straight, even a little bit of easy turn disc. Like if that's what you're looking for, oh, when I throw my Hex, I yam on it. And you'll find an MA3 player that tries to describe their Hex that way. And it may be because they've seasoned it, whatever it may be. But the Matrix, I would not think of the Matrix as being a quote neutral disc. Like I would think of the Matrix having a little more stability, than that. So it's interesting that you compare it to the Hex. So how did that comparison come about?
Well, when I throw mid-ranges, I like them to be noticeably different compared to my fairways. I don't like when I bag discs, I don't like having that like 250-foot disc, 275-foot disc, 300-foot disc. Like I'd rather have it be 250, 350, and then I work the 350 down and I work the 250 up.
Okay.
Which is why another disc that I am surprised, actually, no, I'm not surprised that I didn't like it, but most people are surprised, is the Envy. I can't throw the Envy to save my life, but at the same time, I don't want to, because when I bag throwing putters, I only bag one for the most part, and that throwing putter has to do everything for me. Before Discmania, and when I was on Discmania, it was the Tactic. So I only bagged one Tactic, and it was an extra hard Tactic. It could Anheuser, go straight, Heiser flip turn, forehand, everything. So that's kind of how I built my putter game. So I with that thought, it has to be a little different with MVP because they don't have a baseline tempo yet.
Okay.
So the tempo has a bit too much stability for that. So yeah. I also bag a Watt. for the turnovers.
Okay.
But I would say, what thought were we on? The Matrix versus X?
Yeah, Matrix versus X, yeah. The comparison.
So I like having a bit more of a difference compared to mids and fairways. So the Matrix doesn't go as far as X, and it has a bit more reliable fade for me.
Okay.
The hex could get away from me if I'm trying to throw like a straight to hyzer with a mid range.
Yeah.
So I like the Matrix. It kind of fit my distance slot a bit better for mid range shots.
That's fascinating. And I think that makes sense in terms of I need to have a distinction between the two of them because it makes decision making easier on the course.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people bag the hex because it goes so far. Like I'll never forget the first time that I remember seeing a hex fly in person, was Hunter from Foundation. He brought it to Creator's Cup, 408-foot hole. And this dude grabs his hex and just pumps it all the way down, puts it in the circle.
Yeah.
And like Brody was like, yeah, it's just a simple mid. And I was like, Brody, none of my mids do that. Like I don't know what to tell you, dude. Like that's insane.
The hex does it.
Right? Like it's so good. But I could see that you want the distinction between the two of them. So talking about like that shot shaping in terms of like having your mids kind of do all of it. Do you just have seasoned matrixes? I don't know what the plural of matrix is, Neo, but you flip, like if you're trying to go all the way over, do you jump to like a detour or something like that for the understable side of your mids, or you just don't have something over there?
I have a patent pending matrix and it's surprisingly flippy.
Okay.
But it rarely gets thrown. The thing you'll learn about my game is I'll throw one disc on almost anything. So my main mid-range is a Cosmic Neutron Matrix, and they're the most overstable run of them. But if I want to throw a turnover, I'll throw that turnover with that matrix, if stable.
Okay.
But at the same, I beg two matrices, there's an overstable one and an understable one. Whatever the shot calls for, I'll throw. But for the most part, it'll be the overstable one.
Yeah. So, we'll go to, you mentioned the Wrath as one. So on the positive side, what are some molds that you didn't expect to be so reliable for you, but ended up working out? I'm guessing the Matrix also slots into there.
I would say Matrix, the tempo definitely. I knew I was gonna throw it because when I got my first tempo, I aced with it the first week.
Come on.
Yeah, actually, the first week that I threw MVP, I aced with it, and I couldn't promote it because I wasn't able to announce the MVP signing yet. So,
Secret aces.
Right. I aced the first week, and then the next week I aced again. So the tempo was like, it was an immediate yes for me. Actually, okay. I love that. I compare it to a zone, but it's sharper, and it's still a four speed, but it's sharper, so it goes farther.
Okay.
Hey, shout out Thomas Gilbert. He was looking for a farther flying zone, and I showed him the tempo, and he loved it. So, okay. I would say if you're looking for a farther flying zone, try the tempo, especially the soft proton one.
Okay, that was the most recent OTB drop.
Yeah.
Okay, dude, I love it. So the Paul Kranz signature tempo. That's the dream.
I'll cry if it doesn't happen.
Okay. Don't make him cry, MVP. Let's not make him cry.
Yeah. The other surprising one was a Crave, which is
interesting.
Surprising. But I thought I was gonna bag servos. I don't know why I tried them once and then never tried them again. It's not that I didn't like them, but then I found Cosmic Neutron Craves. And they're surprisingly overstable.
Okay. And,
wait, no. Actually, I got my fundraiser disc, and I got them on Eclipse Crave, so I was like, yeah, I got to try the Crave now. So I threw mine, and it was like, mine are pretty understable. Like, I'll heise and flip to turn them. And I kind of liked it, so I was like, you know what, let's try another Crave. Let's see how the Crave throws. So the only other one that I had was a Cosmic Duke Shonaran, and it's overstable, and I absolutely love it. So if you have any Cosmic Neutron Craves that are overstable, hit me up. I only have two. So the Crave is surprising, but at the same time, it's not, because it's such a good disc. If you're looking for that, I mean, it literally flies and lands like a mid-range, but goes as far as a fairway. So great for wooded holes and tight shots and everything.
Yeah, dude. The crave is one of our things. So our community, we have, for those that listen, we have this website called Disc RPM, where you can. It's kind of like, have you ever heard of the website My Disc Bag, where people input it? So Disc RPM kind of took that concept and improved on it in a major way. So they have these like communities you can build. So we have an In the Bag community, has 1,481 people in it. And one of my favorite things is you can literally search like by a disc name. And so I can type Crave and I can see how many people have a Crave in their bag. And amongst our community, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We have over 320 people in our community who have a Crave in their bag, which is sick.
That's a good choice.
Come on with it. Now, on the other side, let's see. I'm going to type Wrath. A few less. There are less than 20 people who have a Wrath in their bag. So it sounds like people are missing out.
Right.
Okay. So, well, Paul, we want to talk, on the last half of this. I don't want to take too much of your time, sir. So I just appreciate you coming on, man. I know you got an off week right now, jumping back in at Preserve, but, looking at your start to the year. So, I'm going to rattle off some places here. Your first cash was, you took 40th at Austin, and cashed. And then, next cash was the Q Series, 303 Open. If we're talking like pro tour put on events, I guess Q Series feels like a question, like, you know, like a,
it's like a silver series.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but then, so not the start that you're looking for. When you look back at the first half of the year, 'cause I really do feel like we're at about the halfway point, maybe a little over half. What do you feel like was the disconnect heading into the first half of the year? Because I'm sure it's not the performances you were looking for.
Well, I had a long talk with my uncle on the way to Illinois the past weekend, and kind of broke it down a little and gave myself some perspective. In my mind, it's not the excuse, but I think deep down it is. My life completely changed. Like, the longest I've been away from home before leaving for tour was 2 weeks, and that was 1 week before I left for tour.
Wow.
So I was gone 2 weeks, and then I was home a week, and then I left for tour, and I haven't been back home since February 15th. So it's been a few months, and I have seen my parents a few times, but at the same time, it's like we were talking, and the disconnect is probably I'm just settling in without realizing it. Like, I feel like this is a lifestyle for me, and I'm totally happy. I'm not homesick or anything, but at the same time, I've spent 19 years of my life at home with family. Every tournament, I would drive to the tournament, play the tournament, drive home, sleep. And then if there was a two-round tournament, or a 2-day tournament, 3-day tournament, it would be the same thing. I'd only be a home, I would only be away from home for 4 or 5 days at most. And most of my practice is in my backyard listening to music, and I don't have that consistent place to go back to every week to practice. So I'd say the disconnect deep down is my life is changing. And I had this conversation with him 3 days before this past weekend that I won an A-tier in Illinois. And it kind of like made me think even more. I'm like, maybe I just needed to accept the fact that I am completely changed in what I do every single day, and nothing is consistent. And so I'd say I kind of clicked with that thought, and it like took almost a burden off my shoulders in a way. So I would say definitely that, but at the same time, I've had so many other things going on this year that it's like distracted me from true practice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I will never diminish the skill level of the pros that are out there. The people are very good on the pro tour. Very, very good. They are you take most of your local pros and your local pros, and the distance between you to them as an amateur to your local pro is still for most people, that's the distance between the local pro to the top guys on the tour. Like, it's crazy how good, how skilled the tour is, and as it continues to develop. And someone asked me once, like, Robbie, would you ever consider like dropping everything, putting your like nose to the grindstone, and like trying to push to go make it on tour one day, taking like a bonanza type route? And I just know what you're talking about, Paul, of that, like, your life has to change. I know that is not a lifestyle that suits me. I love my routines. I love that every Tuesday night I'm going to this Domino's, I'm picking up my pizza, I'm coming home, and I'm watching some YouTube. Like, I love the Thursdays I go to Buffalo Wild Wings. I know, like, I'm on Mondays I go to, like, I love my routines. So I think that that's definitely something to acknowledge. And also, the even if you were playing, let's say you were playing A-tiers every weekend in your upper, like in your area, you're probably still not even, when it comes to playing those A-tiers, you're probably still not showing up on Monday for that A-tier, practicing it all week, playing the event, turning around, driving. Like, it's just it's a vastly different lifestyle. But take us to this weekend. You've mentioned this weekend a couple of times. You played the Rumble Pro Divisions 2024 in Illinois, and you come out with the dub. And it's not like when you got to this event that it was, oh, well, Paul Kranz, the touring player, is here and no one else. Like, there's no other tour car holders here.
Yeah.
Tony Moe was there. Callaway was there. There was definitely some competition, for sure. So walk us through, you're playing an A tier. Did you feel less pressure not being on a pro tour event walking into this?
No. So that week was interesting for me, because all year, let me try to explain this. So I have not been nervous almost at all this year. Stepping up to hole ones, not nervous. I don't have any butterflies in my stomach. I don't know. It's just not like clicking with me. It's not that I lost passion for it. It's just, I don't think I realize what I'm doing sometimes, like where I'm at in life. So I haven't gotten nervous at all.
Yeah.
And then this week, driving to Illinois on Tuesday, I kind of just sat there and I thought about the tournament, and I realized I could win this. I can perform well. This is where I'm going to turn my week around. And I instantly got butterflies in my stomach. I wasn't even like, I was still 3 days away from round one, and I was just sitting there like queasy stomach, legs were were like getting tired, and I could like, if I tried to stand, it would almost be like I can't, like I my legs would give out. So I got nervous for the first time just thinking about the event. And then day one, stepped up to hole one, and I'm kind of like shaking, like my hands are shaking, and I have the adrenaline and the nerves for the first time all year. And I think that's what I needed, because when I'm nervous, my brain and body click a bit better, and I throw harder, I throw straighter, I throw just all around more accurately. And it showed. I mean, hole one, I started out with a 45-foot birdie putt, and I don't think I can only think of a few events where I start out with a birdie hole one this year. So, okay. Yeah, the mindset definitely changed compared to the rest of the year. Which you would think that I would get nervous at pro tour events, but I have yet to get nervous. So that was the biggest thing, was nerves, and that fired me up. Totally gave me motivation to perform well in the round.
Dude, that's awesome. I feel like so many players run from those butterflies of like, I need to calm down, I need to feel good. And it's like, as you, like you're saying, sometimes it's not the worst thing in the world. Right. So round one, you come out in third place, solo third, you're two strokes back in the lead. Ben Callaway and Austin Bates both shoot a 14. You shoot a 12. You catch them the next round. You shoot a 9. Callaway shoots a 7. So you're all tied up heading into the last round. Now, looking at it, you only have 2 bogeys this entire event. That's honestly, that's so sick. I was talking to an MA3 player about this a couple days ago, and we were just talking about bogeys and things like that. And it was like, when I heard a pro describe a bogey as moving backwards, that changed pars for me, because it was like, you know what? Pars on certain courses, pars hurt, but at least you're not truly moving backwards. Like, it's going to take me 2 holes now to sort of get that stroke back. So you go into round 3, you're tied for the lead. You had walked into this event telling yourself, hey, I have the chance to play for the win here. What's going through your mind heading into round 3?
That I'm going to win. I told myself multiple times I'm going to come out a champion, whether that's through a learning experience or performing well. I stayed at Ben Calloway's house the night before. We had burgers and hot dogs, and Andrew Fish was there too. I actually recorded a podcast with him. And I told Ben, I'm like, I don't care who wins. Like, I just want us to have that experience of like competition. I don't want one of us to run away with it. I wanted to win, but at the same time, all I cared about was the experience coming out of it. And like, maybe later in the year after I've had good performances, I'd have a different mindset. I'd be like, yeah, I want to win, nothing else. But I think this, having such a poor start to my season, all I needed was the confirmation of 3 good rounds in a row. Yeah, so going into it, I was like, all right, I'm going to be a champion no matter what. Have that mindset of have that good mindset. You're not going to get mad. You're going to learn from through all the shots that you throw. And started out hole one, and I birdied, took the lead right away, 1 stroke, and I did not lose the lead at all for the rest of the round.
Come on.
So, yeah, I started out well. Hole 6 in as an example was par 4, but it's reachable. But just imagine like a tight fairway, dogleg left, and the basket is on a side slope that's literally like that angle. Oof. And the basket is here, so it just keeps running away. I threw a bad tee shot, threw an amazing approach shot to 55 feet, 50 feet short of the basket, so I was putting straight downhill. And walking up to the putt, or before walking up to the putt, Ben said, yeah, I think you landed to about 70 feet. And I was like, all right, I get an easy par after that tough scramble. But I saw that I was 50 feet away. Walking up to the putt, I was like, all right, you know what? I told myself I'm going to be a champion. I will be a champion. I don't care. I'm not laying this up, no matter how scary it is. And I stepped to the putt with that mindset of like, I will do it. I can do it. And just made the putt dead center. And that was kind of like the point of like, all right, today I'm capitalizing on things. So the only putt I missed all day was a 35 foot putt. And that was a hole before. I missed the putt the hole before. And right after that, took that low and made it a high right away. So,
dude. Yeah, so did you?
The mindset was I got this all day.
Did you big butt bid on that hole? Because I'm seeing on I hole did. Six, you yeah, like you get the birdie. He took a par.
Yeah, he. I think he missed a 20 foot putt.
Oh, cuts to the soul. Good. Well, it's good to know that it happens to the pros too.
it hurt me to watch.
Okay, so. You have the lead. So let's see. I'm gonna do the math real fast. So you're up one, you're up two, you're up one, you're up two, you're up three. You're up three with one, two, three, four. Yeah, up three with four holes to go. Is that sounding about right?
Yep.
Yeah. So hole 15, 255 feet. This hole. Ben has a video of this hole, so it's the only reason that I get to see the holes because he has a video of this.
Yeah.
Downhill, it looked tight on camera.
Yeah.
So that means I can only imagine this hole has to be like treacherously tight.
Yeah.
Talk us through your drive because you've got the box, and then what Ben does.
Well, I'll start the hole before. The hole before is a bonus birdie. Kind of like a really awkward uphill nose up forehand with a fireball, a 9-speed. So in my mind, it's probably the bonus birdie of the course, even though it's probably only 280 feet, 250. It's just very difficult. Stepping up to the hole, I had the box, and I was like, if I birdie this, I'm going to win. I have two strokes. If I birdie it, I'll most likely have three strokes. And I ended up putting it under the basket. And I was like, all right, three strokes with four holes to go. Obviously, I can lose. But with how I've been playing, I was like, there's almost no chance that I'm losing this. So step up to the next hole. I grab a tempo backhand. I've been working a fan grip, actually. And I've been loving it all week, mainly because of my finger. Been injured, but then throwing fan grip and I throw it fantastic, but the wind picks up and kind of tips it to a little bit too flat. If it was this, the hyzer that it was on, I would have gotten a perfect anti-skip to circle one, but I hit the ground flat and landed about 55 feet short. So then Ben steps up and he performs his magic. I believe he was throwing a really unstable roach, baseline roach. And when I saw him step into the tee with that disc, I was like, holy cow, this shot is going to be so cool. Because it needs to be like extreme hyzer flip to straight to slow turn and drop. And he throws it out of his hand, looks so perfect. And I just see it slowly start turning. Hits dead center chains and he aces.
Oh.
Yeah.
So he aces. Is there any moment where you're like, I'm gonna run the putt, or are you just like, I can't run this putt?
Yeah, no, I've tried running the putt. I was right, there were trees right in front of the basket, and I was like 50 feet back. So I had to get on a knee, straddle out to the right, and my body weight was on the low side, so it's a lot harder to generate the power. So my whole mindset was to run it, but it ended up just being a layup. didn't really commit to it enough.
Yeah. So you end up, he gets two strokes on you there. So he's got one stroke, three to play. What's going through your head after a moment like that happens?
I went over to a couple of friends and I just smiled at them. I was like, well, what can you do? There's nothing you can do. And they were like, all right, just, you got this, focus up. And grabbed a matrix. Next hole, Ben Parks. Well, first of all, Ben Parks, which is his box. And then the other two guys birdied the hole before, so I had to watch them throw two, and they all parked it too, I believe. No, one guy missed. He threw it about 30 feet. But the other guy parked it. And step up to the hole after watching three pure shots, and it's kind of a tight shot. So I grabbed my matrix and was like, you know what? Just commit. All right. Threw it. I think I threw it to about 15 feet. So, but with that being said, I was the most nervous I've ever been in that situation, in that time. I was literally leg shaking, could barely stand. I did a squat before I threw to try to get some blood flow to my legs. Felt unbelievably queasy. And from my experience, I throw things harder like that.
Okay.
So I aimed farther left than I normally do. And in return, I actually fair blocked it a bit and threw it right down the middle. So my decision making was pretty spot on in that moment, but we ended up birdieing that hole, and then the next hole birdied. I had a 25-foot putt for birdie, and I did the classic Gannon burr of you putt it and then bring your arm immediately down. I jolted my arm pretty hard. So yeah, we birdied that hole, and I had one stroke going into the final hole, and it's a pretty obvious forehand hyzer, probably about, I'd say 325, 350. And I'm not too sure why, but I think Ben didn't throw a single forehand before that hole, all around. And then he stepped up with forehand. So in my mind, I was like, all right, I don't see this being parked. So he threw it about 45 feet long, and had almost no look at it. The only look that he had was a forehand run at it. So once he threw that, I felt a bit more comfortable, but I made the same mistake as him, and I threw it 60 feet long in the bush, and I had to lay up. So then I watched him throw a forehand, like line up a forehand for 20 seconds, and I was so nervous that he was going to make it. He ended up missing. Yeah, so that was my first bogey free round of the year as well.
Dude, electric. To bogey free round when it counts the most. So as my final question to wrap it up, because I want to say once again, thanks, Paul, for coming on. I really appreciate you, man. The looking at it, what does a win like this inspire you for the rest of the season?
It proved to myself that I can play three good rounds and perform well under pressure. And it showed me that I can still get nervous again. And that's good, because I'm thinking about preserve in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and I'm nervous right now. So I definitely clicked with a lot of things in mindset and life and whatever. So I'm excited. I have a week off, and then next week is Kansas City Flying Discs, which I'm playing against Kale LaVisca and Levi Hancock. So not the biggest field, but it'll be similar to this past weekend.
Yeah, dude, that's epic. Okay, so true final question. We've talked about this. You're a foundation fan. like enjoy the videos. So give the guys the sales pitch. Why are you going to be more fun to have on content? Because you're going to be in their neighborhood for Worlds. I'm looking forward to. Hopefully you and I can film a video together because I'll be up there for Worlds as well. I'm getting up.
Yeah, of course.
I'll be there the Wednesday before Worlds start. So maybe you and I, we can play a little, we'll play something easy. We'll play a little pitch and putt and have a good time. Run some aces. So give us the sales pitch. Why Paul Kranz needs to be on Foundation content, especially over that German guy.
I Foundation itself is probably my favorite YouTube channel ever. I love their content, and I'm sponsored by Discord today, so I can't like hype them up too much. But I love watching their channel. Their challenges are my favorite entertainment. I compare them to Simon Genius, where it's like so entertaining that you're just gonna watch it undistracted. And it's always been a dream of mine to be on a Foundation video. I've been watching their videos since I started playing, so 5 years.
Okay.
And I've watched nearly every single video.
Dude.
Yeah, so any sort of challenge I'd love to do.
Okay. We'll get you we'll see what we can do. Make it happen. So Paul, dude, I appreciate you, man. Wanna give you a little spot here. Shout out the sponsors, plug it all, do your thing.
Okay. Start with Disc Golf 978. They're my local retail shop out of Sterling, Massachusetts, and I describe them as the best family to be part of. They run basically the entire New England, Massachusetts, Connecticut, like that area scene for disc golf. Every tournament has their name on it, and they support so much. Last year, I think they ran like 25 tournaments in the area, so maybe even more than that. But they definitely major supporter me just with everything. And then Sunstein, they're helping me out this year with some travel costs and everything. So if you need a lawsuit taken care of or something, hit them up. They also know disc golf well. So and then MVP, obviously, they took a big chance on me this year, but at the same time, I'm happy to prove that it's not a big chance. They made the right choice, so I'm happy to have them as a sponsor this year. And my social medias are paul.kranz on Instagram and Paul Kranz on Facebook, and then Paul Kranz Disc Golf on YouTube. So,
dude, it's incredible. Well, Paul, we appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for coming on. Looking forward to hanging out at Worlds. It'll be a good time. Good luck at Preserve. And we'll see you in a couple months.
Sweet. Thank you.
Bang. There we go. Well, y'all, this is going to be a little bit of a longer episode for sure, because when I get to talk to cool people, I love just getting to have a conversation. And then I look down and I'm like, oh, we've been going for an hour, Paul. That's my bad. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Be sure to go support Paul. Paul Kranz, it's P-A-U-L, just like you would expect Paul. And then Kranz is K-R-A-N-S. So Paul.Kranz. Go check him out. Go support him over there. I want to say thank you to Paul for coming on, taking time out of his day. He's on an off week, and he's still doing business here with us recording. So looking forward to that content. Let us know, what challenge should we do with Paul while he's in town? Not only what challenge should I do with Paul on my channel, but also like what should Foundation try to do with Paul and have a good time with that. So, but Brad not being here because, you know, once again, just a push reminder, go check him out. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Shoot those messages. But we have to find out what's new in the warehouse. What's going on? So I'm going to do my best interpretation of this, because I actually forgot to even text Brad to be like, yo, ABB, what should I be like, what's new in the warehouse? So thankfully, Jason got us hooked up. So Here are some things that are new inside of the warehouse this week. They're dropping. They'll have dropped 2 hours ago, so you want to go check them out. We have Kristen Tatar 1,000 Rated Graces, Kristen Tatar St. Pros, Kristen Tatar Claymores, and the new Jury. The Jury putter, I think it's a 2302. One of the best things about putters is that if you have not found a putter that works for you, where you're like, I just feel like I don't get consistent releases on my putt. I feel like I don't get consistent releases when I'm throwing the putter. It's always nice to be able to go out and find new putters and test them out. And thanks to Foundation Care, you could test out the Jury to find out, is the Jury the putter that you've been missing your entire disc golf career? The reason that you haven't been able to make putts, Jury's out. You needed a different putter. You can go test out the Jury, and if it doesn't work for you, thanks to Foundation Care, you have 30 days to test it out and check it out, see if it works. And if not, you can always trade it back in and get an Envy, get something else that matches something that you know you're going to love. All you got to do, there's a form at the bottom of foundationdiscs.com for you to check out. Fill that out, and we'll send you a shipping label. Super, super cool. But all the Kristen Tatar stuff, 1,000 rated, guys. It's so sick. So awesome that we have a 1,000 rated FBO player out there in the field. Stoked for Kristen. These graces are gorgeous. So gorgeous. Definitely want to check them out. The Saint Pro, another fantastic disc. And the Claymore, definitely a slept on mid-range. But not only that, we also have Lone Star going up on the website. There's a big push right now for Lone Star to be up on the website. We've got Mockingbirds. If you remember, before Hunter put the Robbie C. It in his bag, he had the Mockingbird that he was throwing. Great roller option. We have the Armadillo, fantastic one speed that is straight flyer, thumb track on top, glidey lid-like disc. The Curl, hey girl, how you doing? The Curl, for those of you who have had a Wraith described to you, so here's the progression, right? You have people describe a Wraith as an easy to throw destroyer, but for lots of people, the Wraith is still not easy to throw. The Curl is an easy to throw Wraith, at least in my opinion. So really great option. The Dome, understable fairway driver. You have the Guadalupe that complements the Dome because the loop is a super overstable. The Lone Wolf, fantastic neutral straight flyer. The Penny Putter, the Tombstone, the Warbird, and the Yellow Rose. The Yellow Rose, I'll go ahead and admit, I'm not familiar with the Yellow Rose, so it must be a newer mold that's out there. Definitely go check it out. We got Lone Star coming up on the website. I will tell you, you know, little confessional, because it's just me, so I'm getting a little spicy. I personally, I know that Hunter said that he believes that Supreme Plastic from Trilogy is his favorite feeling plastic on the market right now. And I will tell you that if you like a soft premium putter, or not putter, sorry, if you like a soft premium plastic, Bravo Plastic by Lone Star Discs is one of the best feeling plastics that I have ever felt. And I would easily put it in my top three favorite plastics out on the market right now. All right, here we go. Liam, away from the, for those of you who are not visual watchers, you can tell by the tone shift. We just got real close to the camera. It was a moment that we had. If you want to dive in, just check it out in the later part of the episode. So, not only that, but we're hoping to get some Gateway up on the website as well. We got a big Gateway restock coming, as well as AGL. AGL is above ground level discs, manufactured by Gateway. Really cool mold opportunities that come from that. So just running through, a lot of you know we put some Wizards up on stock. Obviously, I'm a big fan of the Wizard. Connor's a big fan of the Wizard. The Zarg gang, holding strong. But we wanted to get some more Gateway molds and AGL molds out there. And we have some very classic ones that are just fantastic for you to check out the Gateway lineup. I feel like everyone looks at Gateway for their putters and sleeps on some of the other mold options that they have. So from AGL, we have the Baobab. We have the Acacia, which is a new putter that they have. Baobab, super overstable, really fun. If you want the Zone OS with the thumb track, the Baobab is for you. The Journey, the Shaman, the Spear. The Spear, I know Jason has been loving the Spear lately. The Spear, very Jackalope replacement-esque. So if you like the Jackalope, you want a little bit flight, but you want a little different hand feel, the Spear could be great for you. The Mystic, the Spirit, the Stego by RDG Reptilian Discs, the Stego. I mean, if you're looking for a way to just like have a good time, Stego's there, the Spell, the Devil Hawk, the Warlock, and the Wizard, of course. So Gateway, we may not have all of those molds up by Friday, or when this video is dropping. The priorities, we're trying to get those Lone Star up, but that Gateway is here in the warehouse, so we are excited to get that out to you. So hope you guys check it out, foundationdisc.com. Remember, foundation care free, included with every order on foundationdisc.com. So super sick. Hope you guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We miss you, Brad. We're excited to have you back next week. Happy birthday, brother. Hope it was a phenomenal one. But for everyone else, you're going to go out there. You're going to try these discs. You're going to do what Paul said. You're going to go try the Crave. You haven't checked out the Crave before. You're not one of the 320 in disc RPM who are using it. And you're like, wow, this is incredible. And remember, if it's good, you keep it in the back. We'll see you guys next time.